Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun, from elite runners to weekend warriors. Find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
I guess I go into any race always giving myself a chance to pull off something amazing. I know that I only have so much talent, but I also like to believe in miracles. And that attitude has led to some massive, massive, disastrous races, some big blow-ups for sure, but it's also led to some triples and some home runs for sure.
On this episode of The Rundown, I got to speak with ultra trail runner Scott Sterndahl. His journey in endurance sports began at the age of 18 when he started racing mountain bikes with his buddies. His passion for being in nature ultimately led Scott to trail running. So far, he's had some great results, with a second place finish at the Bromo Ultra 80K in 2015 and a fifth place finish at the Harakana 125K a year later. One thing's for sure, Scott knows how to push his limits, and we're excited to see what he gets up to next. Are you already subscribed to The Rundown? Running with WRG and still can't get enough? Sign up to their weekly newsletter and always stay connected. You can learn more about what's happening in the community, hear about exclusive run events, and stay up to date with the podcast. Just go to iamarunner.ca and subscribe. Simple as that. You'll never miss a beat. In the news this week, I have to tell you about a trail runner who was attacked by a mountain lion just a few weeks ago in Horsetooth Park, Colorado. 31-year-old Travis Kaufman was pounced on by a young puma during a training run and got into a life-or-death wrestling match. After being clawed, bitten, and scraped for the better part of 10 minutes, Travis finally managed to get on top of the feline and step on its throat, killing it and freeing himself from its claws. He left the animal on the trail, ran 2 miles to the trailhead, and got a ride to a hospital. He was treated for cuts, puncture wounds, and lacerations to his face, arms, and legs, and was released the next day. He suffered no broken bones or tendon damage, but did require over 20 stitches to his face and wrist. Gladly, he's okay, and hopefully, he'll be running again soon. I'd also like to give you a heads up on an upcoming run retreat led by our Episode 4 guest, Ariane Rabi. From May 30th to June 2nd, she will be hosting the 4th edition of the Outrun Retreat in the Eastern Townships. You'll be able to experience guided group runs, movement classes, conferences with guest speakers, and delicious food, so you stay well-fueled throughout the weekend. I've been lucky enough to help lead the Outrun the past 2 years, and the participants always leave learning something new. Hopefully, I see you there. Make sure to check the show notes for links and more information. That's all for now. Gotta run. As an osteopath and ultra trail runner, my next guest understands all the stresses we put on our bodies before and after big races. I'd like to welcome to The Rundown, Scott Sterndahl.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming in today. I actually got your name from my buddy Marty, who's been treated from you because you are an osteopath as well, right?
I am.
Awesome. Yeah, so all the broken runners from RunRate are coming to see you and your name popped up and he said you're a pretty good runner too. So,
well, it's my pleasure to help out the fellow runners.
Awesome.
For sure.
Awesome. Yeah, I went through your bio a little bit and it says that you started in endurance sports around 18, but what was it like for you before that? Were you an active kid growing up?
Yeah, I was super active through school, through high school. I played all the sports, all the team sports. And I was always all right at those sports, never a superstar, but just tried them all and had a blast playing all kinds of stuff.
Awesome. Yep.
And then basically, I was a hockey player. And one summer I said, you know what? I want to become a better skater. So I got myself a pair of rollerblades and we were up north at the time with my parents. And I went for a rollerblade on this open stretch of highway or road. It was a beautiful day. And when I got back from that excursion, I felt something that I had never felt before, that feeling of having done something for an extended period of time by myself in the sun, open road, the silence, the movement, the endorphins that I got from it. And I just wanted to feel that again. And I didn't really, you know, realize how good that kind of thing could make me feel.
Right.
And it was pretty wonderful realization.
It kind of sums it up real nice. And it's really hard to explain to people sometimes. I find,
totally.
When you tell them, you know, I went for my long run on Sunday, and they're like, how long is that? And you're like, a couple hours. You're like, what?
Yeah.
What's wrong with you? Check your temperature.
You're mentally ill.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. It was the rollerbladers high, which eventually turned into a runner's high.
Amazing. Yeah. Yeah. And you said that you got into like mountain biking too at around 18 years old. So
how did that develop? My buddy Andrew and I were going to Vermont. His parents had a place there, and we were getting up to all kinds of shenanigans in the woods and like hiking and just getting out there up in the mountains. And then we just loved doing that kind of stuff. And we decided one day to, you know, rent a couple mountain bikes from the local mountain bike store, and we got on those bikes, and we just both fell in love with it. And then it was me and him, and we just were training, and we became training partners, and we would train in Montreal and train in Vermont. And then we started going to races in and around New England as we were 18. So we were still juniors and just loved it. And we were doing pretty well, and we had a blast. And then he stopped bike racing seriously, got into some other stuff, and then I kept going with it, and took it to like a semi-pro level, I guess, and ended up traveling around Canada and doing a whole bunch of Canada Cup races. I lived in California one winter just to train, and did the World Cup out there in 1998. My parents came out to see it. That was fun.
Cool.
And that lasted, mountain biking lasted till 1999, and then I stopped. And then decided I wanted to be a kid the teenager that I never really was, because I was so serious about mountain biking. So I ended up just sowing my wild oats a bit before getting back into running 5-6 years later.
Crazy. Yeah. And is the training stressful for mountain biking?
I put a lot of stress on myself. I got really serious about it. And I was actually listening to Mel on your last show, and when she was talking about how serious she was when she was a kid with diet and stuff. And I could really relate to that, because I got so heavy into that hook, line, and sinker, like the lifestyle, the diet. I mean, I wasted, in retrospect, wasted so much energy, like thinking about eating and like, you know, not having this and not having that and all these little details, and I became quite obsessive about it, you know. And I don't think it was beneficial, you know, looking back, you know.
Well, and in what sense?
Like I said, I wasted a lot of energy, I think. I think, like so many young athletes, I was chronically overtrained. just went crazy with training. And I think if I had paid more attention to listening to my body, and maybe less attention, you know, worrying about, you know, how much, you know, salad dressing I was putting on my salad. I think Mel mentioned that exact example, or how much butter I was putting on my pancakes, or what have you, or ice cream, or who knows. I probably just would have been able to get to a higher level in cycling, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And I think in a way, as a young guy without much guidance, I may have handicapped myself a little bit with focusing on the wrong things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and that's interesting too, because if we're talking about Mel, you know, she had some coaching growing up too. Did you also have a coach going through that process?
With cycling, I think I once hired a coach for a year, and it was okay. It was okay. It wasn't anything revolutionary in my cycling career. Mm-hmm. By that point, I was kind of towards the end, and I had learned a lot already. It was early on that would have been really helpful, like when I just started, you know, 18, 19, 20. That would have been great, but that's all right. I had a blast.
You kind of just figure things out on your own and like learn how to...
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we would read what the pros were doing, and we tried to do it. which was probably not the best thing to do. Although I did this, I did pull off some pretty massive, crazy workouts, some pretty legendary workouts.
Yeah.
Do you know the Bolton Valley Access Road?
I do.
In Vermont?
No.
Oh, so it's not probably not worth it. It's this legendary climb in Vermont. It's probably 4 miles, 4 or 5 miles up from Route 100. Vermont goes all the way to the top of Bolton Valley ski area. It's a paved road, and a lot of the pros would train on that hill. Anyway, I got to know that hill pretty well. I remember doing I remember this one workout I did on my bike where I rode from my parents' place in Stowe to the base of that hill. So that was already maybe an hour and a half ride, and hammered there intervals the whole way. Mm-hmm. And then went up and down Bolton Valley Access Road 3 times, and then intervals on the way all the way back home to the house. It was like a 6 hour workout. I mean, I was pretty pumped that I pulled it off. But I would do stuff like crazy stuff like that.
Yeah.
Often. That's just one example. If I had someone to pull the reins in a little bit, that may have been good.
Yeah. Yeah. When you don't know any different, you just kind of do whatever you.
Yeah. I just went with it, going out and hammering every day, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. Even my easy runs, my easy rides, I was kind of hammering them. And then until you learn, that's not the way to do it.
Yeah.
Same thing applies for running for sure.
And when did the switch happen? To come back to running or?
Let's see. So 2006, 2007, I always kind of kept running because even when I was cycling, I would cross train with running. I would go trail running a lot in the country, even in Montreal and Mount Royal. So it was always in my blood. And then I stopped for a bunch of years. And I was, just rock climbing and having fun. And then I just started to run some more, and it just kind of snowballed from there. I was like, oh, let's do this thing. Let's figure out what this running thing's about. And I think I ran the La Fontaine 10K in October 2007. That was my first kind of real race.
Okay.
Yeah. And then it just went from there.
You just got hooked.
Totally got hooked.
Yeah. That was that's how I started too. It was a charity 10K.
Nice.
Just someone I worked with. She was into triathlon and stuff like that. And she's like, why don't you come and run this charity 10K with us?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, okay, I guess. I was a soccer player. I didn't have any running experience.
Right.
We finished that day and she looked up my time and she's like, hey, you ran pretty good.
You have an engine, man.
you should try this thing out.
And now look where you are.
Yeah.
What did you just run in Toronto last year? 240 something?
245 just, yeah.
That's sick.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a hell of an experience for sure.
Good for you. You crushed the ghost race too. Oh my God. Who's this Justin guy? 29 minutes or something. Yeah, Holy moly.
So the ghost race is a set course, right? It was 8 kilometers
up and down, that classic, up and down the Olmsted.
And you can run it. Anytime you want, and it goes through Strava, so all your times get posted, and there's a leaderboard and such. So just for anybody who doesn't know what it is, but
How did you break 30 minutes on that thing?
I had a training to do that day, and I'm like, okay, might as well just do my ghost race today, and just gave it hell.
You did in Blanchard. You'd be like Mathieu Blanchard and all the pros.
Yeah, but they probably weren't trying very hard.
I doubt it.
It was their easy run. It was my tempo, but their easy run kind of thing. Well. But it's one of these things. But I lost my train of thought a little bit. But
so we were talking about me getting back into running.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's from a 10K.
Yeah.
Where does that, you get kind of the fire gets ignited and then.
Like everyone else, it's like, oh, well, maybe I can run faster and then maybe I can do a half marathon and then maybe I can, I was like, oh, I'll never do a marathon and 40K, 42K, I don't want to do a marathon. And then before I knew it, I was on the starting line of the Ottawa Marathon in 2008. And man, that was crazy. Like I remember driving the course with my late friend, John Bell, who was a great runner and actually just passed away last year, really young, which was a really sad story for another time. But we were there together and we drove the marathon course the night before the race. And I was like, holy moly, like this is a long way to run. Like it took us an hour to drive the course. I was like, we're going to run this? And we did.
Beautiful though, eh?
Ottawa was fun.
The course, yeah.
Yeah. It was fun. It was a great experience. Amazing. For sure.
And was it like a 10 to a full for you?
No, or? I went like 10, half. I did the Montreal. What did I do? I ran the Scotia half, I think, that spring, right before in 2008. That was my first half, I think, or second, first real one. Mm-hmm. And then I ran Ottawa that May, 2008.
Okay.
Yeah.
And for you, like I know for me, first time I do any distance, it's always for completion.
Yeah.
And to have fun. Like I always set those easy goals. I have like usually have 4 or 5.
I was like, screw that. I'm running 2:45. Okay. I was like, forget it. I'm running. I was like running for 2:45, which was completely ridiculous.
For the marathon?
Yeah, for the marathon. Yeah. My first marathon, I'd run like a 1:20, 1:30. I was like, 2:45
solid.
Doable.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it wasn't. I still broke 3, which was good for a first time.
There you go.
I totally bonked it. Like I felt great. Like I was running through. I was like, yeah, this marathon stuff's easy. It's like running, like waving to the crowd, 30K, waving to the crowd, and then like 32K, boom, like wheels came off like in a huge way, and then like limped home.
They call it the wall, right?
The wall.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And it was a solid wall hit.
Overtrained, undertrained for that.
That was good. I was in good shape. Like considering I did that well. Like I ran well, and I had a pretty good ramp up to that race. I dealt with some injuries when I first started. People always ask me like, how do you run like 100K and not get injured and stuff? And I say I'm actually, knock on wood, been really, really good the last like 9-10 years. But the hardest part for me was the first 6 months. I don't know if you had the same experience. Mm. When I first started running seriously, first 6 months, I was injured every 2 weeks. It was super frustrating. But then, you know, like figure it out, treatment, stretching, reading, you know, figuring out what's going on.
So
and
what
then
kind
my body just got used to it.
What kind of things were you facing early on?
Knees, sore knees, and like Achilles, plantar fasciitis, like the regular stuff. Mm-hmm. But I remember like every 2-3 weeks, hip, like it would pop up. And I wasn't I was in the fitness industry still with my company, but I wasn't so well versed on exercise physiology, more, you know, the way the body works. You know, I knew way less than I know now. So every injury was terrifying for me. I was like, oh my God, I can't run. My running career is over. But now if that happened, like I know what's going on and I can manage it better.
Mm-hmm. You were a personal trainer at the time.
Yeah. So, I was a trainer. I started this company called UNI Training, in 99. We had a nice little company, and long story short, it still exists, but I sold it in 2009. Mm-hmm. To two of my original trainers that were working with me, and they're still running it and doing a fantastic job, and it's thriving. But that was my foray into the fitness industry, and then that led to osteo.
Mm. And so with that background, how did you kind of get through those injuries early on? Because I think this is something that's important to talk about
for sure.
And whenever you're either talking to new runners who are gung ho about starting to run and will like want to push through and so they can get to that next level or to that first starting line.
Yeah.
Or if they've stopped running and now they hate running.
Right.
Because of the same injuries you're kind of talking about.
I'm not built for running. I hear that a lot.
Right.
Come on.
We were born to run.
Totally.
but if you were in the fitness industry, when you go to the gym and you do a bench press that you haven't done in 2 years, you're going to be really sore and hurting the next day.
Especially if I did a bench press that I hadn't done, I'd be like hospitalized.
Exactly. I haven't done a bench press in 3 years.
Right.
But anyways, that's for another time as well.
Yeah.
But so how did you work through those? Or do you remember?
Starting over, figuring out what was going on, like looking up, you know, stretches to do and exercises to do, getting some treatment. It's around that time that I actually started getting treated by an osteopath, and that kind of lit the fire and kind of lit that, initiated my interest in it because it was so effective. So yeah, that helped me get through it. And also, I mean, myself, like just knowledge and then experience, learning from experience, trial and error.
And then from there, is that when your interest in osteopath or how you call it?
Osteopathy.
Osteopathy.
Yeah.
Osteopathy.
I got treated by Pierre Gagnon, who's an osteopath in Montreal, and I got treated by him maybe 15 years ago for the first time, and I was so impressed by the results that I'd never had an osteo treatment before. I was like, what is this? Like, are you a doc? He was talking about all this stuff. I was like, are you a doctor? Like, how do you do what you're doing? Like, what is this thing? And he's like, it's osteopathy. There's a school you can go to learn this. And I said, oh, that's pretty neat. I didn't know that people knew this stuff. And that planted the seed, and then I was still running my business. And then when it was time to move on, it hit me like a flash. I was like, I'm going to become an osteopath. It's the next most logical thing for me to do. And it just seemed like the right move for me.
Cool. And you got into running, and then the osteopath, you went to school to be an osteopath.
Yeah. I got into running, I guess, 2007, 2008. And then I started, osteopathy school 2009.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice.
Yep.
I'm a huge fan of osteo, of like going to the osteo, and
yeah, it's fun.
I've experienced the exact same things that you did. It was Ariane Rabi that introduced me to hers.
Yep.
And, it's magic. It's like, how do you, I always find it funny when they ask you to stand up and then they put their hand on your back or whatever. And like, mm-hmm. they're literally pointing into the pain. They're like,
yeah,
this is your problem area.
Well, it's kind of easy to see because they're looking at your spine and they're looking to see if there's a break in the curve. Mm-hmm. There should be like a nice smooth curve if you're bending to the side or bending forward. And it's pretty easy to see if there's a little break and you just put your finger on that. And like, does that hurt?
Yeah. So we can all be osteos now.
It's simpler than you think.
No. Yeah.
It's simpler than you think. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts that you just have to know where stuff is. But once you know where everything is in the body and how it's supposed to feel and live, it's really simple. It's pretty straightforward. Yeah.
So who treats you? Are you self-treated or is that even possible?
No, I mean, I just had a great treatment by a colleague of mine in a course that I just took. Kianush, he was amazing. I have another osteo, one of my teachers, who's one of my teachers that I go to if I need to. I see Lauren Roden for active release therapy. If I got just like a muscular niggle there, here and there, just to work it out. So I get a little bit of everything.
Nice.
Yeah.
I love the fascia release before a race.
Yeah, it feels good.
That's the best.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never had it right before. I usually have it the Monday before a race. Like I have a race on Saturday.
Yeah.
And I had a good rub on Monday. And feel great.
Yeah.
It's the best. Yeah, it's good.
It's
so feels good.
So what are the most common, we were talking about Butch and Marty, and like, so what are the common issues you see in runners? Like
runners are different than the general population in that, in runners, you see a lot more lower extremity stuff, you know, feet, calves, knees, hips. Whereas in the general population, you see more like low backs, necks. We treat a lot of that. We treat a lot of that with runners.
Cool.
Yeah.
And what are some of the things that you're like tips for injury prevention that you would like, that you suggest, or when they leave you, you know?
It depends on their profile, right? Like it depends on their patterns of tension and or weakness. And that's how I would prescribe certain things. So usually with runners, there's just the pounding, the force vectors being transmitted up from the ground through the body just lead to a lot of congestion, like in the interosseous membrane, the two in between the fibula and the tibia and the lower leg in the foot. And then if those components become congested, like let's say the lower leg, which usually acts as a natural shock absorber, especially the fibula, the way the fibula bone grows in a spiral, and that spiral form actually dampens, it's a natural shock absorber built into our bodies, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But if that bone becomes compromised by either too much pounding or compromised in other ways from above or below, then the shock absorbing capacity of the body can be affected. And then the pounding from the ground goes right up bypasses the legs and goes right into the hips and the back and then and the upper body. So that's when you start getting more full body symptoms. But usually with runners, that's where we start, is making sure like the chassis, like the shock absorb, the shock absorbing capacity of the frame is optimized. So we start at the feet and the legs, make sure that's working well.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Do you, I know we talk a lot about like heel striking and forefront striking, mm-hmm. midfoot striking. Is there, like, I know that midfoot, you know, forefoot striking is probably more beneficial. Do you think like it becomes like less problematic for runners?
You'd have to ask my buddy, Pat McGee, who's a, okay. who has a master's in biomechanics.
There we go.
But
our next guest.
Yeah. There you go. Who's also a great osteopath.
There you go.
You know, you've probably read all the same studies I have with all, they came out a few years ago with like the force being less if you're a 4 foot striker. I believe it. It makes sense to me. Although you are seeing world-class runners who are heel strikers still. So the word is out. It's complex. We're so well made, and our bodies are such incredible compensators that we can compensate for so much for a long time. But I lean towards the 4 foot camp for sure. I mean, that's the way I run and that's the way I try to run. And I feel better when I'm running that way for sure.
All right.
There's no question. I run faster. I'm smoother when I'm, you know, have that nice tall upright position on the front part of the foot, you know, for first third of the foot, as opposed to sitting back for sure. Feels better.
Yeah, exactly.
Makes sense.
I feel that way too. I think it's, and like when you're talking about the muscles being able to absorb shock, I feel like that's more of a, how I think about it, is like a spring absorption more.
Yeah, for sure. Because when you're on the front of your foot, right, you're pushing more of the load to the posterior chain. So if you're you can imagine like landing on the front of your foot, it's almost like you're doing a heel raise off a stair using your calf muscles, posterior chain. Whereas if you're landing on your heel, the force is going, it's closer to going straight up, up the bone, and it switches up towards more of an anterior shock absorption pattern where it's, which is just not as efficient, but I'm not an expert, but that seems to make sense to me too.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So after the marathon, we'll bring it back to your racing and stuff like that.
Yes.
What were some challenges getting up to, like, was it marathon again or?
Okay. So 2008 spring, I ran my first marathon. I was crippled for 2 to 3 weeks. Not only that, I had this horrible pinched nerve in my neck. I don't know why, but I was a mess for 2 or 3 weeks after that race. And I finally recovered from that. And then I trained again for, I was like, all right, let's do it again. And then I trained hard all summer and I ran Philly that fall.
Oh, how's that?
And ran like 2:49. Amazing. So I broke 2:50. Crying at the finish line. My dad was there. It was like, oh man, I'm loving this marathon-y stuff. I'm going all the way down. I'm going into the 2:30s next time. Mm-hmm. And then, then winter came. And then, and then Vermont came, Vermont marathon came the following May. Trained like crazy, 2:46. I was like, whoa, this is 2:46 low. I was like, okay, it's happening. It's really happening. I'm going to go to the Olympics. I'm going to I'm going. So yeah. So I train again. I'm like, all right, let's do it again. Rested up, trained again. And then I ran Montreal that fall and ran like 3 hours. So I was like, oh, I was devastated. Like totally blew up. It was a super hot day. And I went out way too fast and it blew up. And I was like, oh, marathons. Mm-hmm. It's not that easy. It doesn't always get better.
Yeah.
And then I kind of I was really disappointed after that. And I pulled it together and then I did a few more and it came like, I had a few more good races where it came down under like 2:50, but then they really started coming up again. And, I had a, 2-year-old daughter and then, eventually had another daughter on the way. So, things were kind of popping up and, the sleep quality wasn't there. And I noticed, I was training, but there's just missing that pop, and, so my time started to come up again. I was like, all right, well, maybe this marathoning thing is done. Like I've had my fastest races and maybe I'll just kind of do something else. And I started trail running and I'm just loving trail running more and more and more and less interested in the road and the track workouts and stuff. And then just said, oh, maybe I'll go do, I entered a 50K in Vermont, the Vermont 50.
50, yeah, that's the Vermont a tough 50 race, eh?
Yeah, in September 2010. And went great, got like third.
Okay.
I was like, oh, cool, this was fun. And was pumped, super pumped after that race. And then that was it.
That was your old backyard.
Yeah, it was a bit, it was further south than Stowe. Like it was still like an hour and a half drive away from Stowe. So I didn't know the terrain that well, but it was, I mean, Vermont, it's hilly. Mm. It's hilly and rocky and gnarly and fun. That was really fun. I was stoked. And then that was 2010. And then pretty much from there, just learned all I could about trail running and just did it more and more and then started entering races.
Cool.
Yeah. And the distance started to grow.
It's yeah. Absolutely nuts.
Yeah.
The 50, I can't even, like, I've done a 65, but I can't imagine.
Did you do that last year?
Not last year, the year before.
Okay, cool.
Hurricana.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was one of these things where my coach.
It's a rough course.
Yeah. And yeah. It was muddy and swampy. And,
yeah. Yeah. It's brutal.
And my coaches were like, they had asked me to do it early on in the year. They said like, hey, we're going to go run this. And Mark Langevin, who's also been on the show, he was running it and they were all going to do this trail. They're like, it's going to be fun. We'll get a cabin. And
right.
I was signed
like,
up.
How is this fun? is a horrible, horrible experience.
Because it fills up super fast, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I had signed up. My goal was do Ironman Tremblant.
Right.
So I signed up for this race, but Tremblant was my goal, you know?
Yeah.
So this came like a couple weeks after that. So
right.
It was just like really in the back of my mind, you know, and went and Mark gave me shit because I bought new trail shoes because I don't run trail. I just bought some shoes that would handle mud,
right.
You know?
Right.
And yeah, it's one of these things. It was not fun for me.
It's gnarly. That's wild country there.
Yeah, wet,
up
wet.
Up in Charlevoix. It's gnarly.
I took off my shoes before entering the first ravine.
Yeah, you took off your shoes? Oh, classic rookie move.
Yeah. Marty St. Pierre still laughs at me for that one.
Yeah, that's classic.
Yeah, and he wasn't even running with
me
at the time.
Never take off your shoes.
Yeah, they are. Well, Pierre, I don't know if you know Pierre or Alexandre Cardinal.
Yeah, for sure. PA.
That the whole gang, they actually saw me do it. And I ran that course with Leisha, Butch, and Pierre.
Sweet.
Because we kept going back and forth. And we
sweet.
Just,
that must have been fun.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun at the looking back, but the mud and all this stuff, I couldn't handle it. But I wanted to ask you, because you were mentioning the marathons and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We'll get back to the trail. But
yeah.
So was the training the same? And you were just like, thought you would naturally progress? Or did you start training differently because of your family and because of other factors? And that's kind of what brought your time. Like, I don't know if you can pinpoint something that would.
I think the human organism is so complex. And for us to go out and push our bodies to the limit, so many things have to be perfect. And the training has to be right. The recovery has to be right. Sleep has to be right. Your mental state has to be right. When you're at that level of suffering that it takes to run like a PB, everything's got to be clicking, right? As you know. So I think the first thing that changed was sleep. You know, my daughter, I ran my fastest marathon a month after my first daughter was born. So I hadn't slept for a month, but it hadn't really like caught up to me. And then the time started to creep down and I was still training, but man, the lack of sleep and not recovering as well as I was probably the biggest change in those early years. I still had like my engine. I was still fit, still doing the workouts, but it was just that little, you know, 2% that started to change. And then from there, you know, there's a whole interplay, as you know, with, you know, the mental and the physical and the pressure we put on ourselves. Expectations are huge. When you do something the first time, there's nothing to lose. But then suddenly you want to get better. And then you do have something to lose because you risk being disappointed. And it's the human condition, you know, played out in a kind of micro way.
Mm-hmm. And then you put the work in and, you know, so when you're at your level, or when you feel like you're at your best, there's that something small. Like, I mean, I think sleep's huge. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
That's, and I think a lot of people don't like maybe underestimate it a little bit. Like sleep is huge, like for your recovery.
Yeah. I mean, I was sleeping like 3 hours a night as a new parent. So it was brutal on training for sure. And everything else, you know, work, everything. So it's tough.
Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah.
So then after the Vermont 50 miler, I just want to bring 50K. It back. Yeah. It was 50. Yeah, it was Vermont 50. Okay.
Yep. 2010, and then just got into trail running, and then I guess we could fast forward a bit for the trail story, and the next big revelation was the Bromont race in 2015. I did the 80K, and that was so cool because my buddy Andrew and I, who I think Andrew McMartin, who I introduced you to, who we might be hearing from,
I hope so.
Yeah, we decided to go to the 80K. And we left, the race starts at 3 a.m. We left Montreal. We were like, what are we going to do for like sleep? Are we going to camp? We're like, no, it's not, I don't want to camp. Let's just not sleep and drive from Montreal straight to the race. So we did that. I picked him up at his house and we drove from Montreal. We left Montreal 1 a.m.
Wow.
And after, you know, and got to Bromont. It was dark and freezing cold and it was so cool. I was so pumped. I thought it was the coolest thing ever that we were going to start running in the middle of the night.
Was that the first time?
Yeah, that was the first time. Mm-hmm. And we had our headlamps. I was like, oh, this is the coolest thing. I kept saying, this is the coolest thing ever. This is the coolest thing ever. And we lined up and the race started and we were running and it was freezing cold. I had like a horrible headlamp. It was flickering on and off. I couldn't see anything already. My night vision's not great. And I was like, I can't see anything. This is so cool. We're running in the woods. I was running with him. He's like, yeah, it's pretty cool. and I was just on cloud nine. I was loving every minute of it. And I was on a different planet that day. I just had the best day. And the sun came up. I was like, oh man, the sun's coming up. And this is just the most beautiful experience. And I completely fell in love with it. I just wanted to do it all the time. I wanted to do it on every weekend. And had a great race. My wife and kids drove up from Montreal to see the finish. Big emotional finish. It was super embarrassing.
Like Philadelphia or worse?
same, like bawling in front of my children. They were traumatized. It was ugly. I had like the ugly cry face finishing the race. Anyway, hopefully no one will find any photos of that. And then that was October. And then I was like, let's do it. And was pumped for the next year. And then 2016 was a great year. I did the Harricana 125 race, which was basically a religious experience. It was pretty fly.
Cool.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with Anne Bouchard?
Yeah. She was in that Bromont race.
Exactly.
Yeah. She was in that Bromont race 2015. Mm-hmm. I think we ran a bit together for the first little while.
Yeah, she was on the show too before Mel, and just a really nice human being. And she's only been doing this for 6 years. It's quite remarkable. Did the 80 and then won the 160 and still holds the record. For the course. But
she's impressive.
Oh my god!
Yeah, it's solid.
It's a small community, right? Because like,
yeah, we all kind of know each other. For sure.
So from 80. So again, like. I've done 65. Mm-hmm. For me, these distances do not compute. They just don't. They don't. And I think maybe it's because I'm not done with the marathon yet. And I think you said it well, where you're like, you know, when your time's up.
Yeah.
And I think that day will come for me where I'm just like, I want something different than the marathon.
Right.
And then you kind of move on from there.
Right.
So is it just like automatically like where you're like, hey, I'm running half marathons. Well, what's the natural progression? It's a marathon, you know. You did 80, you're like, oh well, let's do a 125.
It was exactly that. I was really excited in 2016. I got sponsored by Innovate Shoes, and I really felt like I was good at this, and I felt I was way better at trail running than I was at road running. I was an okay road runner, I guess, but when I got into the woods, I really felt I excelled even more. So I was really excited about the sport, and I trained like crazy for that 125 race. And I think I put in like 4 weeks of 100 miles plus with massive vert, like training, like 4,000 or 5,000 meters a week. Pretty serious training.
Where
pretty
do you do that?
Montreal, Vermont.
Okay.
Yeah. I would escape once in a while. My buddy Andrew and I would escape to this incredible run. We called it the Jaybreaker, and we would drive from Montreal to North Troy, Vermont. and park at the northern terminus of the Long Trail, where the Long Trail starts. Mm-hmm. And we would run from the end of the Long Trail to the top of Jay Peak and back. That was like a 5-hour day with, I think, like 2,000 meters of vert.
Crazy.
Pretty awesome run. We loved doing that. And that was, I did stuff like that to prepare. And race day came, and it was just one of those magical weekends where I was there with my family. We rented a house with some friends too. And just great vibes from the first minute. And started the race. Do you want the race report?
Let's
you
do
want
it.
The report?
Let's okay. do it.
So I started.
You said it was a religious like experience.
It was a religious experience. Yeah, it was. I mean, I'd never done anything close to that long. And anyway, it started at 2 a.m. again. It was heavy. And I don't know if you know the course, but it starts with an opening half marathon on the road. They changed the course this past year, but okay. up until then, it was basically a flat half marathon to start on the road. So the race started and just felt really good and kind of went into the lead with Lewis and Jeff Cochon, who had just kind of come on. That was his first race that he kind of came onto the scene. Mm-hmm. Jeff and who's now like one of the top guys in, you know, Canada, probably, even North America. He's super strong. And, I was running with him and Lewis, and, it was just this magical day from the start. It was the three of us. And then we got to the base of Mount Morios, which is the first big, big, big climb, this gnarly kind of steep, ugly climb, and like 21 K in at the first aid station. And those guys stopped at the aid station and I was fine and I kept going, and suddenly I was like alone in front with like some amazing runners behind me. There's some runners from Europe there. Like I was like, whoa, this is weird. Like, am I gonna win this race? And I did not win the race, but
is this the expectation for you? Like, is this...
I did not on that day I guess I go into any race kind of always giving myself a chance to pull off something amazing. And I know that I only have so much talent, but I also like to believe in miracles. And that attitude has led to some massive, massive, disastrous races. some big blowups for sure, but it's also led to some triples and some home runs for sure. And this was one of those races where I just felt good and I just went with it and was right up at the front basically the whole day. Jeff and Lewis dropped me like a bag of rocks on that first climb. I never saw them again, but I hung on and battled the whole day and got it done. I got fifth overall and it was a great race. I didn't know at around 90K, things got pretty heavy. I basically did not know if I was going to finish. Like I remember it was around 90K. I came into one of the aid stations and I was just spent. And I said to myself, I can't drop out of this race. Like my family, my kids were at the finish line. My friends were there. I was like, there's too many people who are implicated in this day for me to blow this. And I'm finishing this race. And I remember I just chugged. I filled my whole Camelback with electrolyte drink. And I think I just drank 2 liters of energy drink on the spot, slammed down calories at that aid station, got my shit together and hammered the whole way. And that last, the race actually wasn't 125, it was 117K, but they called it 125. But the last from 90 to 117 to the finish, I think it was some of my best running of the whole day. And it was just an unbelievable feeling just finishing that race.
Crazy.
And then I ended up throwing up in someone's driveway multiple times and they came out with towels and it was
where are the wall, like I guess
there's multiple walls.
Walls, yeah.
Multiple walls to climb in an ultra like that. Yeah. It's not just one.
Yeah.
And usually it has to do with nutrition. Mm. The lows come with nutrition or lack thereof. And the tricky thing is that you don't always feel hungry. It's not like, oh, I'm starving. I want to eat. And you eat and you feel better. It's like, I want to die. What's wrong? Why am I doing this? You know? And then you're like, oh, I haven't eaten in 2 hours. So And then usually you pack down some calories and you feel miraculously better. And so nutrition's like number one. It's like an eating these things are like eating competitions. They really are. The running is secondary. It's like a calorie eating competition. And if you can do that, and that's a skill in itself, right? Like to have the stomach to be able to down calories, you'll succeed if you want to.
So what's your go-to on the long trip?
Those super long runs, it's whatever you're in the mood for. And usually by the end of those runs, it's hard to predict what you're going to be in the mood for. Usually ends up being salty things like soup and easily digestible salty things. Usually for me at the end, you get pretty tired of the sweet stuff, like the gels and the sweet stuff just becomes sickening after, you know, even a couple hours, which is a problem that I have, like taking in enough calories. Like it's always been a challenge for me. That's why I think I'm kind of moving away from the ultra super, super long stuff and back towards the 40, 50K trail stuff, which is kind of my sweet spot. And it's less dependent on calorie intake. And it's just more fun for me.
It's more marathon-like.
Yeah, it's faster. It's, yeah, it's just more fun. There's less of that like death march mentality. Mm-hmm. I've done it. I've experienced it. I've had some good experience. I had some terrible experience. Like the next year I went back to Harricana and had a brutal race in the same race, you know, and ran like half hour slower and just had a brutal, brutal day. So it's finicky. It's finicky.
It's so long. You don't know what can happen.
Oh, it's like, yeah, it's crazy.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
And you're talking about those perfect days that you're having where everything goes perfect. You're not the first person to tell me that. My coaches tell me that all the time. And they've raced a lot.
Oh, yeah.
They've raced a ton. And they've each had one of those perfect days.
Totally.
Where it's just like everything, nothing can go wrong. They feel amazing the whole time.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And we're talking like long distance, like you got, like what you've done. And
yeah, I mean, this was 15 and a half hours of running. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you'd ever told me that I'd be able to run more or less pretty much nonstop, I guess, for 15 hours in the woods.
Yeah.
I would have thought you were insane. And it's amazing what we can accomplish. We have so much untapped potential. It's unbelievable how much we can do and that we don't realize that we can do. It's inspiring. It's exciting.
How do you deal with the mental side of things? Like forget the physical, like a lot of this, and I've heard it from a bunch of trail runners and included, how do you deal with the mental ups and downs throughout these races?
Well, a lot of it, people ask me that all the time. And I mean, a lot of it is extremely enjoyable. Like the thing with these races is that you're running pretty slowly. So the real suffering only sets in late in the race. So you have hours and hours of enjoyment running through beautiful terrain by yourself in the woods. Like it's awesome. Like there's few things in life that I enjoy doing more than, you know, running in the woods. So you've ample time to enjoy that before the pain sets in. And then when it comes, and it always does, you just have to bear down and be like, all right, well, I signed up for this. You know, it's not like if I wanted to just run and stop when I chose to stop, I would just go for a run and, not pay the entry fee and mobilize my family to, or just myself or whoever to get to the race. It's like you signed up for this, and this is a vehicle, an opportunity for you to see what you're made of. And that in itself is really fun. Also, it's another kind of fun. It's like a suffer fun.
Which
painful fun.
Most people don't understand.
Right. And then when you cross that finish line, it's the elation is unbelievable. I mean, it feels like an unbelievable accomplishment. You're like, it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels great.
Was that 125 your greatest accomplishment to date?
In running, in terms of like pure running achievement, I would say so. Yeah, it's up there. I mean, that was a big one. I had a great race last spring in Bear Mountain in New York, which was another kind of magical day for a few different reasons. So that was another highlight. I've had a few good ones, you know. I've had a few bad ones, definitely, you know. And the bad ones or the more challenging ones make the successes that much sweeter. Yeah.
Is it hard to gauge because courses differ? Like, I know, you know, marathon times are easier to...
There's less variables.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, to calculate. Yeah. Different courses suit different types of runners. There's some courses that are, you know, crazy amount of climbing. Others are flatter. Like this race I'm doing on Saturday in Florida. It's great because it's super fast, twisty single track, which we don't have a lot of here. So you can run fast. Like, you know, I'll be running at like 4:30 pace, which is fast for trail running, you
okay.
know? And, whereas, you know, on the terrain that we have here, it's more up and down. It's more technical. So it's typically slower. So yeah, it's highly variable, and that's what makes it fun. You know, different stuff. I love the technical aspect of it. Like it's something that I just really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I kind of seek out races when I can that play to my strengths because I like succeeding. In my old age.
Well, makes sense.
I don't want to, I like, it's fun doing well.
Yeah.
So I pick and choose now.
That's it.
Yep.
There's a reason why I've run Toronto 3 times. It's like, it's a flat course. It's the temperature's perfect. Are you more of a warm weather runner or a like cool weather runner?
I'm a large, hairy, person. Mm. So I don't do great in midsummer temps. I don't do great. I do better in cooler weather for sure.
Yeah.
My heat dissipation capacity is not, it's not in my genes. No, we came from like Arctic, the Arctic.
Okay. That's where you're, is that
your? No, I don't know. Russia. My grandfather's from Russia.
Is he? Yeah.
Yeah. We don't do great in the heat, my family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, I don't do well in the heat either. It's
yeah. I wilt like a flower.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And I don't know, like they talk about acclimatization. Like, have you ever tried anything like that? Like getting into the heat before?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. I've been to Jamaica a few times just on holiday. And usually the first day that I get there, my first run is really, really hard. And then, you know, by the end of the week, it's no big deal. And it's just an example of how the body gets used to running in the heat.
Mm.
And yeah, it's important. Definitely.
Cool.
Yeah.
Another thing I wanted to ask you is like how running, because you've been doing it for a while now, like how running's changed for you over the years, maybe in your training or in your nutrition or just your mental approach going into whatever distance you're doing.
Yeah, I think like looking back over my career as an athlete, like we talked about cycling a bit before, I was so serious when I was in my late teens, early 20s about everything that I ate. And it was a bit of a pain in the butt and I wasted a lot of energy on that stuff. So now with, you know, almost 25 years of experience with sport and getting to know my body, I've definitely become more chill with that stuff. Like I don't really spend that much time thinking about what I'm eating besides the fact that I just like eating healthy food and I don't like eating crap. That is basically the extent of it. I also, with running, I used to start every run way too fast and get injured. Now I make sure I, you know, limber up a little bit. Most of my running is extremely slow, as you can probably relate to with the proper, like, modification of training intensities. Like you definitely want to have that large swing in paces to maximize different energy systems. So that's really worked well for me. My slow runs are super slow now. And my harder runs are harder. I really take time to warm up properly, you know, cool down properly, stretch a little bit here and there. So little things that I've learned over the years have helped. Definitely.
Any strength training?
Little bit in the off season. I'll do like a month here, a month there. Very super basic weights, lower body, upper body, just to, you know, keep the rig tight-ish. And then once I'm running, I'm just spending too much. I don't have time really to do anything else besides run because I'm running, I don't know, once or twice a day. So with work and everything else. I just run. And the way I see running is that if you're doing proper intensity, you're mixing it up with hills and stuff, that is weight training. I think it was the coach of the Hansen's Project. Remember those guys, the Hansen's Project, the Brooks Hansen's Project back in the, you know, like 5-6 years ago, they had some really good marathoners coming out of the States.
Okay.
Like Sage Cannaday and Brian Sell, those guys. And they were doing some good things. And their coaches would say, they never have their athletes do lower body weights. And he said something like, I read it once. He's like, do one of the workouts that my guys are doing and tell me after if you've had a good leg workout, you know, like saying what they're doing running is their leg workout. Mm-hmm. So they would work on upper body and core stuff. So I thought that was interesting. And I kind of agree with that, especially if you're in the trail doing hills and stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't do tons of weights.
Just like hills are.
And I bulk up like a bodybuilder as soon as I start weight training. So that's not good.
Well, I've heard some top runners say that too. Like, training your upper body and strengthening your upper body, it's not going to make you go faster, you know?
No, but the upper body is connected to the core, you know, and the core strength I really believe in, it's super important. And ideally I probably would do a little more core training, because if you have a weak core, it's like your muscles have not, your limbs have nothing to anchor themselves on. You want that strong, stiff core, and it will help your running, no doubt.
Cool.
Yeah,
and I think,
do it,
because that's the thing too. Like when you, like later in races, you definitely feel it. That's where you feel the core, the hip.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That whole section where it's like, you're like, oh man, I should have done a few more crunches.
Yeah, and also if you look at pictures of yourself late in a race, like for me, I'm like crumpled up. I look like I'm limping. Like you can just see that the lack of core strength, which I guess is, you know, somewhat inevitable after running for X amount of time, but you can see how it takes a toll on the body, and you see things start to collapse and change, and core strength, especially around the spine, will help you stay, you know, in that kind of, in that nice taut running position longer. Yep.
Is there any checks that you do? Like, I know when I'm running longer, like I do checks, like body checks.
Yeah.
During a race or even during my runs to like self-correct.
Yeah.
So you can avoid those, you know, the rounded shoulders, the hunched over kind of motion. I always kind of like try and drop my shoulders and
yeah, that's a really good thing to do. That's a really good thing to do. I just try to remind myself to stand tall and keep my shoulders relaxed and keep my hips kind of up and forward and stay up on my toes a bit more. Cause I could really sit back in the saddle if I get lazy, and that's not good.
No.
So, yeah, that's a good habit for sure.
With all the experience you have, what kind of advice could you give to, you know, a novice runner or even somebody just trying to go to that next distance?
I would say that you want to start really slowly and be patient with the progression. If you jump into things too quickly, you do too much too fast, you will get injured, 100% chance. Like, there's no way you won't get injured. So do your homework, get on a good program, talk to someone who really knows what they're doing, and progress slowly and give yourself time to progress naturally in the right way before kind of moving up to the next level.
Mm-hmm. And that's something you see. It's so common in runners too. Like,
yeah, because people get excited about it. They love the way they feel and they just want to do it every day. And then they start going out and running an hour and a half every day. And then they're injured.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see it. Like, I follow some people on Strava and I can see some people, and like, that person is going to be so injured so soon.
They're like, going to come see me.
That guy's going to walk into my clinic any day now. Yeah. You can just see it. So yeah, progress slowly. Take it easy on yourself.
It's like that 20 to 60 jump up, you know, where it's just the body needs to, you know, you need to, I always say, you got to build a foundation before you can build a house, you know.
Absolutely.
And that's the huge, you know, it's something over time. Like, you know, you do the 10K, do the half,
yeah,
do the, you know, like,
take it slow,
slowly, slowly. And I still do that now. You know, you start with a better base.
Right.
That's the advantage of continuing, keep going, and after you recover from races, but
for sure,
getting back into it slowly and doing those 30K weeks or, you know, whatever it is,
yeah,
that's a huge advantage. Like, and I've only started to bump up. I have a race in April. I've only started to bump up like in the last couple weeks now, you know?
Right.
But it was like really progressive until that point. So
yeah, there's no need to overdo it. And I mean, I always say to Andrew and I often have this conversation, and we've been training together for about 5 years now. And, we bounce a lot of ideas off each other, and we basically come to the conclusion that I always say, you got what you got. Like, we all have a given ability. We all have a given engine. We all have given genetics, and training can change some of those, but the gains you're going to get from putting in 160 kilometer week, as opposed to 110 kilometer a week, are very minimal, in my opinion, especially if you're a mature athlete and you've been doing it a while. So you may as well err on the side of caution and, you know, do a nice volume of training, but there's no need to like really go crazy mm-hmm. if you're going to maximize your potential.
Right. That makes sense. How do you manage everything? Like, this is a question I find fascinating for any kind of ultra runner, or like my coaches were doing training for Ultraman. It's a 3-day triathlon. It's huge. So I know that they were commuting to work and doing these kind of things, but between like two kids and your profession and the training, how do you manage that?
Early mornings, early mornings. Yeah. Wake up 5 and get my training done. And then I'm done by 7 and then do my day.
That's it.
Yeah. And I come home from my run and, you know, kids are just getting up. And, so it's you got to do it before everything gets going. I'm lucky enough that I can control my own schedule. And I also, my office is in Vic Park, so I have access to their gym. So I can fit in, either a lunch run or a second run. So I've got a good setup, so I can squeeze it in here and there. And then I have a super understanding family. My wife's amazing. Sunday's my long run and she knows it. So, and she doesn't make me wake up at 5 a.m. on Sundays to do it. So I'll get up at a more reasonable time and I'll have my, you know, 2-4 hours to go do my thing on Sundays, which I really appreciate. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You just fit it in.
Where do you normally run in Montreal, or do you usually get out of the city?
I've got my like favorite hilly loops around Westmount and the mountain.
Lansdowne
a lot. Definitely the hood. You know, I've got some good loops. I've really been doing this winter. I got into a bit of I mixed it up a little bit where I'm doing a lot of super easy hilly running, mm-hmm. like very easy. You know, like 5:30 pace, you know, average pace kind of thing. So crawling up the hills and just cruising down, and then doing all my workouts on the treadmill, like my faster stuff on the treadmill this
Tempos,
year.
Tempos, speed work.
Yeah. And, I think it's working out, like feeling pretty good.
Cause you get the quality in the winter, and that's the challenge I find for myself is like, you can't always get a clean piece of pavement to run on.
No, hardly ever. Yeah. And I don't want to risk injuring myself or slipping or pulling a hip flexor on the ice or whatnot, which I've done so many times. Mm-hmm. And I was up until this year, I was hammering runs, like hilly runs, tempo runs. And I was doing all right, but it was taking a toll on my body. And this year, really switched to more treadmill stuff. Thanks again to Andrew's advice. He's like, hit the treadmill, man. It's going to help you. And I said, I hate the treadmill. He said, just do it. And so once or twice a week, I'm on the treadmill doing workouts, faster stuff. Mm-hmm. And I feel good. Recovering better. Still been doing some like long, hard runs on the weekends outside. But it's a nice mix. It's a nice mix.
And you're normally training alone, or you train with Andrew?
I train so early that no one's really wants to come running with me. I'd love to run with you guys.
Yeah.
And there's another group like the cute guys, the CUT,
guys. Yeah, yeah.
That they run on at 7. It's already my like day started. So I can never really run with anyone, unfortunately. So it's really like a solo game for me.
You're always welcome to run, right?
I'm going to join you guys.
7 p.m. on Thursdays from the CLA HQ.
I would love that.
Yeah.
But I'd have to like pencil it in and make plans. And
we'll make a special
babysitters and stuff.
That's it, right?
Yeah.
How old are your kids?
6 and 9.
That's all right. And have they caught the bug to start running, or do they follow in dad's footsteps?
They think I'm nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even they think I'm nuts, and they hold their nose when I come in for my runs in the morning. Stink up the whole kitchen.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Great. So what are you training for now?
So I got this little race in Florida in 2 days.
Right.
50K, 50 some odd K, fun race. And then I'm going to go back to Bear Mountain in May, do the 42K again. And then I'm going to take my first trip down to the next stop in the North Face series at Massachusetts.
Cool.
I think I'll do the 42 again. I like that distance. Also, the race starts at 9, not 7, so I can sleep, which is nice.
Yeah.
And that'll take me into the summer. And I think I'm going to go hit that 40K in Tremblant in July, the MEC race.
Okay.
And I'm registered for the Petit Train du Nord marathon.
There we go.
So it'll be my first road marathon in a long time.
You're coming back.
Yeah. I'm going to just take another kick at the can.
That's a PB there. I'm waiting to happen.
I just love running on that path. It's so beautiful there. So I'm going to do that. That should be fun.
Amazing.
Hopefully break 4 hours.
No, come on. That's crazy. No, I'm sure you'll do great. And
are you going to do that one?
Petit Train du Nord, I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't. I have this year. I'm signed up for Boston again.
Cool.
And so I'm training for that now, and then New York for the first time.
Nice.
In November, so feel super fortunate to be able to run those two races, and can't wait to kind of get started with the training for New York. Boston's been so long right now, and it's so tough.
Boston's tough because you got to train in the winter.
That's it.
Like pressure.
And I've got all the weather there. I got a hot day. This will be my third time running it. We got the hot day. Then last year was like the day from hell.
Last year was like horrible, eh?
Wind and rain.
0 degrees and
0 degrees and just horrible.
One year it was like 95 degrees, humid. Yeah, crazy.
It could be
anything.
I would crimple. I would just walk it.
Yeah, yeah.
Just high five.
Tons of people dropped out.
Just like the first time I did it, just high fived everybody.
Yes.
I gave up. I didn't give up, but I was like, I'm undertrained and it's really hot. I'm just going to enjoy the shit out of this race and just high five everyone. And
why not
take a popsicle here and there?
Why not?
Those are the great
race for the popsicles.
That's it. And that's what I love about trail running too. The food you get is like
great food.
It's amazing.
It's good eating. Those races are good eating.
If you go for anything, you might as well go for that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, where can people find out more about you?
They social can, media. Yeah, I'm all over the place. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram. You can go to my website, scottsternthal.com.
Nice.
You can just book directly through there if you want to, if you have something that's bothering you, a little button, book appointment, or you can just, you can find me.
Amazing.
Somehow.
Cool. there's a question that we'll end on this note, but,
yeah.
What does running mean to you?
Running really has become, it sounds so cliche, but an integral part of my life, of my identity. I can't really imagine my life without it, to be honest. I don't really like to.
Right?
I hope I can always run. I hope I can always go out for a run and enjoy being outside and enjoy the feeling it gives me.
Hmm.
And, yeah, I guess it all comes down to health and staying healthy and being able to have the free time to pursue it.
Mm-hmm. I think it's very well put, and it's funny when you stop to appreciate it. Like I try and do that regularly.
Yeah,
when you're doing it, and you know sometimes you have those even those easy runs. Like today, I was running in the Old Port alone, and just like, this is really nice. Like you
feel so fortunate.
Yeah. Just grateful. Yeah. Yeah.
Same, man. I'm blessed. I feel so blessed. Mm-hmm. And I just hope that I can just keep it going. Keep the dream alive.
That's it.
As they say.
I'm sure you will. Listen, I really appreciate you coming in today and, like learning a lot about you, and like this is the first time we actually met. So
yeah, but now we got to go for a run.
That's it.
Now we got to start running together.
Yeah, right after this, we're gonna put on our running shoes and head out. But again, really appreciate you coming in today, and it was really a pleasure speaking with you.
My pleasure. It was a blast.
Thanks.
All right.
Are you already subscribed to the Rundown, running with WRG, and still can't get enough? Sign up to their weekly newsletter and always stay connected. You can learn more about what's happening in the community, hear about exclusive run events, and stay up to date with the podcast. Just go to iamarunner.ca and subscribe. Simple as that. You'll never miss a beat. Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at iamarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram at The Rundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it. The Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in downtown Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi and assisted by Mark Grimberg. Marketing by Jill Garcia and hosted by me, Justin Pugliese.